Welcome to Perth and Full Circle, Sarah.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So the Lucis Trust, I'm sure many people listening are in the same boat I was before I checked out your website. Tell us about the Lucis Trust and what is it and what is it about?
Lucis Trust, perhaps I should begin by explaining the name. Lucis is the generative case in Latin meaning of light. So the name means literally a trust of light. And it's an organization that was founded by Alice and Foster Bailey in 1922. It has headquarters in London, Geneva, and New York, and our work is worldwide. We have students and co-workers literally all over the world. And I think you could say the real pillars of our work are two aspects. One is the publishing company, which publishes the books by Alice Bailey, which number 24 volumes. And the other aspect of our work is the Arcane School, which is a school of meditation and discipleship training that Alice Bailey founded in the early 1920s. And currently we serve students in 8 languages throughout the world. And we have other aspects of our work too. Triangles, World Goodwill, distribution of a world prayer called the Great Invocation. But the Arcane School and the publishing company are the two main pillars.
Tell us something about Alice Bailey, quite an exceptional, remarkable woman, and particularly for that era.
Yes. She was born in 1880 in Britain, and she was born into an upper class, I think really an aristocratic family. So she was very much a person of her times and her class. As she put it, she was an exceedingly spoiled, rather narrow-minded, class-conscious British woman. She was orphaned very early in her life, and she and her sister were passed between two sides of the family. And she grew up in an ardently Christian fundamentalist home. She was extremely religious as a young girl, devoted to Jesus, deeply devout in her faith, but also very narrow-minded. And her life story is, I think, an encouragement to all of us because, as she put it in her unfinished autobiography, she wanted to show people that it's possible to grow beyond a very narrow spiritual beginning and to reach out in one's understanding to a much more inclusive spiritual consciousness. And she did that through a number of experiences. If you have time, I can...
Oh, please do,
yeah,
yes.
I can tell you about them because her life is quite amazing. As a young woman, she wanted to become an evangelist. And so she joined an organization that sent her to Ireland to minister to the needs of the British troops in Ireland. Then not too long after that, she was sent to India. So this would have been around the turn of the century. And I think you could say her first awakening spiritually was India. She loved India, loved it. And she spent several years there as an evangelist. I suppose the equivalent would be the USO, as it's called in America, the canteens that operate when soldiers are off duty and need a place to relax. As she put it, she mainly served scrambled eggs and hot chocolate and played checkers with these men. And whenever possible, she would read the gospel to them. But she was also helped by this experience in that she came upon people who were not of her class. She had had a very sheltered life. She had never been to a school. She was tutored as a girl and given a first-class education, but she never had any exposure to people who were not of her class until she began to work with these soldiers.
Let alone race, as in the whole of the Indian population and the level of poverty there.
Yes.
And must have been quite a huge shock for her.
Oh, it was. She could see the beauty of the Indian culture and the terrific suffering of the poorest. and I think it was really heart-expanding. She told in her autobiography about one man who was her devoted servant who slept outside her door every night, a very simple man who was utterly devoted to her. And she talked about being aware of his simplicity and his deep spirituality that just emanated from him. So she was very responsive to the spirituality of the Indian people. And this was, I think, her first awakening to something beyond the narrow confines of her Christian faith.
And also the kind of British imperialist thing of being superior,
yes.
I imagine, would have been shaken with that too, if she
yes.
could respect this man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of her assumptions were called into question by her experiences, and her autobiography is quite humorous in telling about how rigid she was in her attitudes and how naive, not only toward people of other cultures, but her own British people. She was very unsophisticated and sheltered as a young woman. And so somehow her guardian angel must have been on duty through all this period, because she got through it all, but it certainly did shatter a lot of her illusions and assumptions about life. But the problem came when she fell in love with one of the officers among the British troops as a young woman. And unfortunately, he was not of her class. So her family was appalled by this choice of mate. And the best decision they could come up with was to send the young couple off to America. So she and her new husband arrived in Ohio, where he studied to be an Anglican minister. It would be called the Episcopalian faith in the United States. And after he finished his studies, they were sent to California. This would have been about 1910, I suppose. They were sent to a small rural town in the San Joaquin Valley of California. It's farming country and very rural, and the people are just ordinary, simple country people. Again, she came up against people that she had never had any association with before. She and her husband rapidly had three daughters, but he turned out to be very abusive. He was a minister, but he was an abusive husband with a violent temper, and the whole community knew about her problem. And what is interesting is that nobody ever addressed it head on, but they watched after her. For example, one farmer who owned the field next to her house plowed the field repeatedly, just so he could be nearby and keep an eye on this family. And she realized once again how kind and how sound the heart of humanity is. So her situation got to the point where she couldn't live with her husband anymore. And with the bishop's understanding and encouragement, the husband was sent off to, I think, Montana. And Alice and her little daughters were left on their own, with no means of supporting them. She said all she really knew how to do professionally was make lace, which isn't terribly practical even then. So she moved to the Monterey Bay area and began to raise chickens. Remember that this is an aristocratic young woman from a Victorian background in Britain, raising chickens and selling the eggs.
And not meant to make her own living and look after herself. She was meant to have a good husband to look after her.
Absolutely. Mm. And never was prepared to take care of herself. Not at all. She couldn't cook. She couldn't, well, she learned to keep house. She learned to sew. But all of this she learned under duress and because she was forced to. None of it had been given, she had not been given any preparation for the kind of life as a housewife that she, in fact, lived. She then got a job in a sardine canning factory, because in Monterey, California, that's a major fish canning area. She got a job canning sardines. And I think our listeners can imagine this is about as low as somebody of Alice's background could be. But she writes again in her biography about the kind of people that she met in that place and how important it was for her to know them, to know that part of society, to know people who were very poor with no education, and again to realize that humanity in its essence is good. And that people can be extremely kind, extremely sensitive to their fellow men, even when they don't have a great deal of education and experience. So it was probably from her soul's standpoint just what she needed to open her heart and her consciousness of what it is to be human.